So I'm originally from Guatemala. I grew up in Guatemala City, and I moved to the US in 1990. That makes it 28 years. Yeah. So we had a long layover, but then we flew directly to Portland via Seattle, actually. I vividly remember coming in late at night and seeing my grandparents. They lived in a small house in Southeast Portland, and they had rearranged it downstairs for us kids. So my younger brother and I shared a room. My older brother had his own room. Our rooms had these two little beds, and each bed had a stuffed penguin on there that my grandfather got for us. Yeah, so that's a pretty vivid memory I have. I think across the board, when a family relocates, there are roles that are reversed, and people didn't anticipate certain changes. I'm a crier. I've said that before. The only thing is, I just want to be able to get the words out. I have no problem talking about this, despite my tears. But my mom, in Guatemala was an actress. She was a live theater actress. She was in over 300 plays. And it was really unusual, but my peers would say, instead of "let's go hang out at the mall" or "let's go to the movies," they would say, "can your mom get us in the theater?" And I'd ask my mom, and she'd say, like, "it's not really an appropriate play for kids," which I don't know other people that have had this experience. It's like, "oh, let us go in the theater," and so she was a woman of culture, and she loved the theater. The university that she graduated from, it's called a popular university. It's a very deliberate name. It's like for the people. It's a sort of a community-based effort, and the plays were written by Guatemalan playwrights, and they were about Guatemalan issues, and it's very cool. My birthdays were the best. The clowns that were her friends would come to my birthday parties and that sort of thing. My dad was a man of influence, and he knew how to do basically very few things, but he did them well. And one of them is he was a boss. When you come to the States and you don't speak the language, and there's no theater for Spanish speakers, and my dad didn't have skills that translated into another job. What happened is, my mom got a job assembling furniture. So she literally made couches. And my dad couldn't get a job. I mean, I don't really know that he tried. I know he's not a lazy person, but I just felt that he was so paralyzed by his perceived inability to really do anything, and his language, skills weren't great. And so all he could do was take the little bit of money that he had and invest it. And he did really well, actually, in that regard, initially, right? I remember, and this is the part that makes me really sad, is my younger brother, he didn't cry like I do, but he was very upset that mom wasn't home. He was not having it. That was not okay. That was a transition that it made us all very sad for her. It's like, you've never had to do this before. You've never had to, like, look at your hands and check out the skin, how it's being peeled off because you've been stuffing, cushions and things like that. Or getting up so early and coming home and being so exhausted. She went through a period of being very fearful that we would experience irreversible or incapacitating food insecurity. And so she would buy flour tortillas, which were new to us, no such thing in Guatemala at the time, right? Hot dogs, which we were all about because what a treat, and bags of cheddar cheese, which is also unlike cheese we ever had in Guatemala. So it was all kind of new, and we did. We melted cheese and put hot dogs in the microwave and ate that. And nobody thought we were suffering. Nobody thought, "oh my gosh, wish we had like better food." We thought, "this is awesome." You know what I mean? And in her own mind, she was just so glad that she could keep us sort of like satisfied with such cheap items. It wasn't until later that I realized that she was doing this because she wasn't sure whether we were gonna be able to afford the things that we needed. As much as I feel like I've lived a life of privilege in Guatemala, it was by no means extravagant. The doctrine in my family has a lot to do with allocation of funds and not wasting, essentially, is really what I'm trying to say. And so we've always been very conscious of that. And at the time, my mom really worried that we would go without. So that's something that in retrospect, I remember thinking that must have been really hard because there was so many hot dogs in the house. Yeah. I think that living in the US has allowed me to evolve a perspective that is framed in love and inclusion. And I see my friends and age mates and peers from Guatemala not being able to or willing to entertain practicing that. Very specifically, I think there's a lot of cultural values that are conducive to things like isms and phobias, you know, so certainly homophobia is huge, you know, and I still get like memes and text messages from groups that I belong to, from my peers in Guatemala, that I have to delete immediately. You know, I don't want these hateful messages on my phone, which are jokes, you know, jokes about Ricky Martin and his homosexuality, for example, you know, I'm just appalled, you know. I know some of the friends that were in the group are gay and they're not out, and there's a good reason why they're not out, you know. So being in the U.S., it seems sort of like, at least in the culture that I've submerged myself in, has always been conducive to acceptance of everything. You know, I use sexuality as an example, but really, truly of everything. I live in an environment where I can cultivate these ideas and sort of, I mean, dare I say it, elevate myself consciously a little more so than I would if I were living in a place where, you know, the social norms really prevent you from being able to interrupt or speak up when you see something that isn't right, because it's very, very hard to do in a place like Guatemala. So I work directly with unaccompanied children who are in the custody of the federal government. I can best describe my job as somebody who can advocate for their needs, make sure that their needs are being met. And I also can inform people who are in positions of making decisions about where their kids are going to go. I make recommendations based on my knowledge of the cases. So there's a lot of conflicts, and there's a lot of sort of cultural negotiation and political negotiation that has to happen. But yeah, I mean, it's no coincidence that this is my job, you know what I mean? And when I do meet these children, it's a pretty great experience. I think for the most part, I mean, we have a lot of kids from Guatemala, you know, and we have a lot of kids from a certain part of Guatemala. It's called the Ischel Triangle, and I've been there, and I can talk to them, and I can show them pictures of when I was there, of the park and the food that I ate, and immediately there's this bond. And, you know, they kind of open up, and I never make false promises. In fact, I say that, you know, I say, I can't really talk to you about details about your case, because if this doesn't happen within a certain number of days, then the only liar will be me. But you can ask your staff to call me, and I will be here within 24 hours. So I'd like to think I offer them hope. I like to think that on some level, they feel that people are being held accountable, that things haven't been put away and shuffled somewhere and forgotten about. Although that is the case sometimes for some cases, and mostly for adult cases. Yeah. I had the great privilege of being on a panel discussion with the chair of the Republican Party for the state of Oregon. So he was here, there was a comedian of all people in the middle, and then me. And we got to answer a question initially, and they said, what is the biggest problem facing the whole issue of migration currently? And we both agreed that it's the narrative. Ironically, I think that a lot of folks who are supporting the current administration are afraid that things are going to change too much. That's really what they identify with. You know, I saw somebody a long time ago on one of the news channels saying, you know, sincerely, what I'm afraid of is that without this president, things will never be what they have been. And while I agree that, you know, maybe this isn't the 50s and maybe it'll never be again, there are some fundamental things about this country that really shouldn't change. And on that level, we totally agree. And one of those things is this country has been everyone's country. Right. And the concept that, you know, that borders exist because humans are unable to overcome their egos, you know, is another thing that we probably would end up agreeing upon. Right. And that that we should all be proud to be part of this country that can still open its arms and welcome people when they need it, instead of policing the world, because that hasn't worked out very well.